This is the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. Yara is the global leader in crop nutrition knowledge and the leading producer of quality fertilizer products. The podcast is intended to facilitate the transfer of knowledge for farmers and crop advisors, improving farm profitability and environmental sustainability. With Yara, knowledge grows.
Thanks for joining another edition of Yara's Crop Nutrition Podcast. We are wrapping up our three-part series on soil sampling. Today, we're going to talk about interpretation and recommendations. So you've taken the soil sample, you've done a good job of getting a representative soil sample, you've sent it to the lab has done their analytics, and they've sent you a piece of paper, whether that's a hard copy or a virtual PDF. And you're looking at what, Steve? What are they going to send you?
Sure. And there is little consistency across the soil laboratory world in terms of how the data is presented. But you'll typically see the nutrients and the other soil parameters like pH and cation exchange and so forth. They'll be somehow on that piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And the list will either be a column vertical, a column horizontal, the number of the sample, and so forth. And then there'll be a number. And some laboratories, many of them, will have near that a range mm-hmm. of normal, typical, acceptable, or different terminology will be used. And then there'll be potentially a bar graph going from maybe red, which would be either be starkly deficient or maybe toxic in some cases, over through yellow, which would be marginal, and then into green, which would be good. Some laboratories use that. That can be a horizontal bar, a vertical bar. Again, every lab has their own way of expressing it. And then they may or may not show a recommendation. Mm-hmm. And so that would be typically what you see on the piece of paper, so to speak, whether it's a physical piece of paper or a sheet on your computer screen or your tablet. There'll be that information will be there somewhere, and the first part of that is just the analytical result we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. That's the analysis. Then what do we do with that analysis? Is that adequate phosphorus? Is that phosphorus level deficient? Those, then we get into interpretation of those numbers and then making a recommendation. And the interpretation and recommendation are typically closely related to each other. If the interpretation is that the sample is deficient in phosphorus, then the recommendation is to apply phosphorus. Typically, those are very closely related, obviously. But that's the final step in the process. And it's the one, of course, that we use to develop a nutrient management plan. And it's, in that sense, I suppose, the most important, because this is the point we actually spend money on fertilizer or not. And earlier steps were also obviously very important, but now we're going to sit down and say, okay, we need this many pounds of nutrient X and this many pounds of nutrient Y, and this is going to be the cost. And this is where it becomes very important that we interpret those sample results correctly and make a sound agronomic recommendation. And in the case of some nutrients, we need to worry about the environmental impact as well. We don't need to worry about it for some nutrients like potassium or calcium. In the case of others like nitrogen and phosphorus, we need to be very careful and make sure that our recommendation is enough to allow for maximum crop productivity, but not too high. We don't want to have any adverse effects on the environment. So the need for an accurate recommendation is even more important for those nutrients.
And I would assume that you want to get not just blindly follow any kind of a recommendation that comes on a piece of paper, right? Because they don't know the field, or they may not know the field. They don't know what stage the crop is in. And so that's where you want to bring in some more expertise, whether that is the grower that's been working the land for the last 30 years, maybe it's the PCA or the CCA that has been advising on that field for a long time that really understands the field and the crop, right?
Scott, that's an excellent point. And the analytical results and the interpretation and recommendation from the laboratory is one of the tools in the toolbox, but it is not a substitute or a replacement for those two factors you just mentioned, and I want to reinforce those. Mm-hmm. The farmer that knows the field has perhaps farmed it for his or her whole life and knows that field, has seen it in wet years and dry years, and has seen it with potentially with different crops over that side. The knowledge that that farmer has about that field is irreplaceable. Mm-hmm. There's not a laboratory number which has as much value as that personal experience. Now, farmers lease ground, they buy new ground. They don't always have that professional personal experience for a variety of reasons. The second best tool is the crop advisor, whether that's a PCEA or a CCA, who works closely on that field and knows that field as well, because he or she has spent many hours and days and years monitoring the crop and the response to nutrients and the pests and all the other factors that go into producing a crop, and knows that, okay, the soil test tells me X, but I know from my professional judgment that we need to do Y. And it may be different than what, it may be more, may be less than what that laboratory results says. Now, I'm not dinging laboratories here. That's not my intent at all. My point is that there is absolutely no substitute for the personal and the professional experience of the people that have worked that ground. I hate, you know, I travel all throughout the country and into Canada as well, and there's nothing more unnerving than standing in the middle of a lettuce field that I've, for the first time I've ever been in that field, and I'll be given a soil sample and said, here, what do we do? And of course, that's the first time I've been in that field. I've never worked with that laboratory. I'm trying to learn. There's no experience for that field rep or the farmer. And I'll turn to them and say, tell me what this means, because they know that field. Now, I know the chemistry. I know how the analytical technique works. I'm maybe aware of the database and all that kind of stuff. Generally speaking, I don't know that field. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows that field like the farmer and the field rep do. And that isn't necessarily the field rep from the fertilizer company. It could be from a processing company. It could be some other expertise. But that personal and professional knowledge is irreplaceable.
And I would assume that there's so many new varieties that are out there that may not need as much of one nutrient or another, and that's not taken into consideration possibly in that analysis, right?
Again, the laboratory is doing thousands of, during a busy season, literally thousands of analyses a day. Mm-hmm. And we don't have, in many cases, databases for different varieties. We have a body of professional knowledge about how different varieties respond, but as we develop new varieties, they do respond differently to nutrients in terms of how they set seed or how they set tubers in the ground and their rate of maturity and how quickly they senesce and the growing season length and all sorts of other factors that simply can't be gathered into a database, at least that I'm familiar with, on a computer system. We have to have that personal knowledge that the individuals that are out there raising that crop every day have.
What about over time, Steve? Is it a good idea to take these samples and interpretations or lab analysis and chart those over time to see what's happening in the soil over time?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I recommend for people to do, whether they do it formally or more informally, is to track how the nutrient level in the soil is changing. Mm-hmm. Now, typically in the case of nitrogen, we should see that be fairly low at the end of the crop season. If we take a sample after harvest, it should be very low if we've done a good job of managing our nitrogen so that we've taken up, you know, we put on the right amount for the crop and it's taken most of it up. But in the case of the other nutrients, we can track those phosphorus, potassium, magnesium, calcium, the micronutrients. Those nutrients don't leach, and they're involved in all sorts of complex chemistry in the soil. And so we can track those over time. And over a period, and it's not 1 or 2 years, but 5, 10, 15 years, we can see if the nutrient level in our soil is building, if it's maintaining, or if it's declining. And if we're looking at phosphorus and maybe we have a field that tested medium or moderate, and I'm going to put a number on here because it'll vary depending on the crop and the soil test and so forth. But if it was moderate and there was a moderate response of moderate likelihood of a response to phosphorus. Okay, through judicious use of phosphorus fertilizer, we've increased that over time to where now it's up in the high range. And whatever high would be. Okay, at that point, we may be able to back off and not apply phosphorus for a while, or only apply an amount that would be sufficient to take care of crop removal, and perhaps a small amount to allow for some fixation. But we may be able to, for example, stop a buildup application that's been a broadcast and rely solely on a lower rate of phosphorus banded with the crop at planting time to get it through that life cycle for that year. We don't want to mine the soil and have it decline, but we don't need to apply the high rate we were to build it up there. Conversely, if we're growing, let's take almonds in California that are a high potassium feeder, you know, 80 to 90 pounds of K2O per 1,000 pounds are removed in that crop, maybe more, maybe less. Okay. If we don't replace that, that soil is being mined, and we'll be able to track that by looking at our soil sample and see, okay, we've been mining the potassium. The soil test levels have fallen from 450 parts per million to 200 parts per million, to pick numbers. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a definite downward trend. Now, we may not know exactly where the critical level is. Maybe it's 150 parts per million, maybe it's 250. But clearly we're declining the soil potassium levels are declining because we're not replacing what the crop is taking off. And at some point in the future, we're going to begin to see a deficiency. Well, in those situations, I recommend that people begin a little more aggressive potassium program. Again, we may not see it that year, but if we're drawing down those potassium levels, we are going to see a deficiency. There's just no way around it. Exactly where we will see it may vary, but it's going to happen. And so we want to maintain that soil resource. Part of a sustainable cropping system is to maintain the nutrients in the soil. Well, first of all, to build them up to a good level, and then to maintain those through judicious application of good fertilizers.
And I think it's important, Steve, also to chart if you're charting over time the soil samples and the nutrient level in the sample in the soil, to also chart your yields per year, and then it kind of you can start experimenting with that and saying, okay, I'm gonna play a little bit with the phosphorus level this year, and does that affect my overall yield, and is there a ROI on that application?
Yes, and certainly in the case of annual crops, that's a very reasonable thing to do through, you know, leaving a strip that you don't fertilize or that you do fertilize or you have and so forth. On a perennial crop, it's a lot more challenging to do that because the perennial crop yield, of course, the crop that we harvested in the fall of 2019 was affected by the fertility program and all other stuff in 2019, but also 2018. And so it becomes more difficult to draw direct correlations on perennial crops where they're physiologically affected by a longer period of time than an annual crop, but very easy to do that in an annual cropping situation. You know, if we think our phosphorus level is getting high, and then let's hold off in part of a field and see what happens. And do our potatoes yield less? Does our wheat yield less? Does our bean yield go down? So forth, and validate in your own field what's the right thing to do.
Yeah, well, soil sampling is just another tool that you can put in your tool belt, as we've discussed in these last three podcasts and all the previous ones on the nutrients that we went through. It's a very, very inexpensive way to understand what's happening in the soil. And finding out what's in the pantry, if you will, that these plants are trying to eat. Make sure the pantry is full of good, nutritious food so that your plants can grow strong and healthy. And then working with trusted advisors, whether that's a retail advisor or your independent advisor or working with a Yara crop nutritionist to find out and interpret those results, working with good labs. Some of the other benefits that you and I talked about even prior, there are some regulations, especially since I live in California and know there's a lot of nitrogen regulations now, and you have to take some soil samples to prove that you're using some of those nutrients wisely. What do you know about that, Steve?
Well, exactly. And that's one of the good points that we need to stress is that in areas where we're managing nitrogen, not only for our crop, but also from a regulatory standpoint, we need to know how much nitrogen is in the soil as part of our nitrogen budget that we develop for the crop. And so in those situations, a nitrogen soil sample is not optional. It has to be done as part of that nutrient management plan for the crop. The other point, and Scott, I should have mentioned this in the very first podcast about soil sampling. You mentioned inexpensive, and I certainly don't want to quote prices for laboratories because they do vary depending on a number of factors. But typically, they're well under $100, and they may be significantly less than that. Now, that 20-acre field is probably got a fertility program that's going to be many thousands of dollars, and it's going to produce a crop that's worth a great many thousands of dollars. And people will sometimes hesitate to spend under $100 on a soil sample. And to me, that is some of the cheapest investment we can make in managing our crop is to take a soil sample. We did talk about how frequently, and I mentioned, well, maybe every third year for some of the nutrients. You know, there are trade-offs in terms of time and so forth, but the cost of that sample, having it analyzed, is trivial compared to the cost of the fertilizer program and the value of the crop. And so where it's practical, and I recommend a sample, not only for every year, but in areas where we're cropping multiple times throughout the year, every crop, not only the nitrogen from a regulatory standpoint, but all the nutrients. Again, the investment in understanding what's going on in our soil compared to the investment in the fertilizer and then the resulting crop yield is usually almost unmeasurably small as a percentage.
Yeah. Well, we hope that the last three podcasts on soil sampling has been beneficial. We hope you learned a little bit about it. If you have more questions, again, go to your retail agronomist. You can go to our website and find a Yara agronomist that you can chat with. What's our next series that we're going to do here, Steve? Should we go tissue sampling? Is that a logical?
Let's talk about tissue sampling because, you know, soil sampling, at least when we're looking at nutrient recommendations, is what we would call a priori. We do it before the crop is growing. Mm-hmm. Now, we may collect mid-season soil samples, and we talked briefly about that. But tissue sampling is a great tool because it tells us what is happening to the crop itself. We're not trying to predict. We're going to measure what's actually in that crop and compare that to values and so forth. So, well, I've enjoyed the last three sessions, Scott, because you didn't once try to stump me with some terrible question that was so off the wall. No, I just kidding.
I've learned my lesson, Steve. I did that through those whole nutrient podcast, and I never stumped you once.
Well, it was fun, we'll spend a session or two talking about tissue analysis as well.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, until next week, we hope you're having a good spring and setting yourself up for some good profits and a good successful year.
Thank you, Scott.
You've been listening to the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. For more information about our company, please visit us at www.yara.com or yara.us. Or for Canada, yaracanada.ca.